It's really about system redesign and understanding how all of these pieces fit together to deliver a better patient experience. And no question, we see that with our clients and their ability to make a system-wide change that really truly does impact patients and frankly impact staff just as much.
This is the Coleman Associate Innovation Podcast.
Innovation?
Yeah, innovation. New, original, and creative. This podcast is designed to challenge the way you think about how healthcare is delivered.
Ladies and gentlemen, the captain has turned on the fasten seatbelt sign. If you haven't already done so, please take your seat and fasten your seatbelt.
Well, welcome everybody. Normally I say this is the Coleman Associates podcast, but this is actually a Coleman Associates live stream, potentially going to be a podcast also. But I just wanted to welcome everybody for this conversation about alternative payment models. My esteemed panel of colleagues today are joining me, some more against their will than others, but I'm just going to have them introduce themselves. So first I'll say I'm Adrian. I'm the Coleman Associates Chief Innovation Officer, and I'm really excited to talk to everyone today. I am a nurse by training, and I started at my health center on the south side of Chicago right out of nursing school. That's where I met Coleman. And a few years later, I begged Melissa to bring me with, and I haven't let go since. Sheree, you want to go next?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Sheree Huff. I am a Coleman Associates coach and trainer. I come to you from Iowa, where I worked in my health center for about 12 years in a few administrative roles, and also started my career out as an LPN. So I've been on the front lines as well.
Great. Breezia, you want to go next?
Yes. Hi, I am Breezia Burgos. I am coming from Colorado, and I am the room administration and the project coordinator to all things Coleman. And I've been with Coleman for about 6 years now.
I don't think that's right, Breezia. I think you should recount.
Is it closer to nine? I'm not sure.
It's one of those years.
You lose track when you're having fun. You know, time flies.
That's so the right answer, Gabe. I was when Adrienne introduced us as her esteemed colleagues, and then she backpedaled on that. I wasn't sure if she's backpedaling on the esteemed part or which part, but you're totally right. If you do the least track of time when you're having fun, it's true.
Melissa, you want to introduce yourself next?
Sure. I am Melissa Stratman, and I am the owner and CEO of Coleman Associates. And before I did this, I was a Coleman Associate client in a federally qualified health center. And before I did that, I worked at a hospital as a Spanish and Church interpreter and a diversity educator and Blue Cross and Blue Shield for their previous managed care product, which is very different than current day modern managed care products. And then in a healthcare hospital research firm.
Right. Thanks, Mel.
Hi, everyone. My name is Gabriel Denvero, calling in from Chicago. Similar to the rest of my colleagues, I worked in the front lines. I was an MA. That's where I met Coleman. We went through a collaborative, then officially transitioned over to Coleman as a trainer and coach, and been here for, I think, 5-6 years now. So yeah, time flies when you're having fun.
There you go. Well, just to kind of get us kicked off here so that we're all on the same page about what we're talking about is, Melissa, do you mind explaining what this buzzword that won't stop coming up in healthcare means, alternative payment models?
Sure, sure. So, I mean, there's actually a lot of ways that you can define it, but if I were to define it to somebody I met like at a cocktail party, as opposed to somebody who's like in finance in a health center, it'd be two different descriptions. So let's err on the cocktail party side, which is healthcare expenses are getting carried away. And the way we figure out, I do this thing, I bill for this thing, I do this thing, I bill this thing, is a little bit of a messy system because it possibly encourages people to give services that they wouldn't necessarily give. It possibly causes patients to not seek services that they might normally seek because of the cost associated with said particular service, as well as just the massive overhead expense of keeping track of which services you gave to which person, how you gave them, when you gave them, if you gave them within appropriate time, if you got the permission from the right people in order to give them. It just has become a gigantic system. And if I think back to one of my first jobs in healthcare, not my first job, but maybe one of my first jobs, I was working for a managed care product within Blue Cross and Blue Shield. And this was a product that was sponsored by a particular large company that everybody knows here in the United States. And I was their key representative for that particular product. And at that time, what we did is we managed care, meaning that like on the health maintenance organization or HMO side of things, we basically said, you know what, we're just going to charge a certain amount for a number of patients. And then whatever care can be given to them, we'll pay providers a lump sum for that instead of having them bill us for all this stuff individually as an insurer. However, I can tell you from living through that system that we still got bills for everybody for everything, which was a paper nightmare. Somebody documented all that stuff. You still did. We didn't get the efficiencies we were supposed to be getting out of a managed care type of a system. Obviously, that kind of went, you know, by the wayside, became much less in vogue. It was very popular for a while with payers and clinics, but not with patients, wildly enough. Not really, because you felt like you weren't getting what services that you wanted. And now in the alternative payment model, this is basically an attempt on a large scale basis for payers and states and CMS, you know, to engage in a payment. Again, thinking about this is where you would drink the cocktail, because it's starting to get to be a lot, right? If you were at the cocktail party. But in short, essentially, this is the point where we say we have to come up with a better system. So we're going to pay people a payment per patient per month to take care of a patient and keep them well. And in fact, if they don't do a great job of that, they're kind of going to get dinged a little bit. And if they do a good job, then they're going to get some bonus. All things aside, knowing that, you know, you can't control if a patient, say, has an auto accident and suddenly there's an expense for that. But if you don't get a patient in for a urinary tract infection and then they go in with flank pain and, you know, end up needing a hospitalization, you're going to get dinged for that because you should have taken care of the patient in advance. So it's a better version of the old model if we can make it work and if we can walk people very successfully into that place.
Yeah. Thanks for explaining it, because it is kind of a lot to like take in. And the way that I often like summarize it for people is the current system we're in is a fee-for-service model. Gabe, how do I describe that? You know?
You see a patient, more money, right?
More patients, more money.
More patients, more money.
And the APM model is all about like keeping folks healthy, which is kind of different, even though it's like this idea of like what we think that we want, at least in healthcare. And so I guess I'm curious, and I'd like to hear from all of my teams, is like, what are you hearing from health centers in terms of where they are in getting ready for this? Or like, is this something that they're interested in? Obviously, Coleman Associates mostly works with community health centers, some private, some folks outside of healthcare. But what are you hearing from people in your orbits?
There's definitely been some conversations. There's also some speculations as far as like what's going to happen specifically. Truth be told, you know, I look at APMs a little bit like PCMH, right? But with a more like fine tooth comb. And the reason I say that is because, you know, in PCMH, you can get the recognition, but it's just checking off a box, right? Like you can basically, and as bad as that sounds, that's the reality sometimes. But with APMs, I think one of the biggest things is going to be access, just like Melissa mentioned. And a lot of, you know, FQHCs struggle getting patients in a timely manner, you know, to get them taken care of for some acute reasons. And most of these patients, you know, if you live in a big city, they'll go to the convenient care, they'll go shop around, they'll go to the emergency room. So ultimately, if you're not well prepared, you're definitely going to get dinged in the long run, which I think, you know, the foundation of setting up APMs and, you know, having patient access, it's going to be super important in order for them to have a good, solid foundation.
Yeah. And Gabe, I think it's so interesting is because a lot of the stuff that I read about APMs, people are all talking about care coordination and high risk services management and thinking about integration, which I think is important. But I'm interested, why do you say access first, which I don't disagree with? But can you say a little bit more about why that's so important?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we work with clients across the country, one of the biggest pain points, and, you know, by no means am I trying to diss anyone in any way, they trying to do the right thing by having patient access to come up with this like super, you know, schedule. But ultimately that schedule that they came up with, it becomes a barrier for them to see their own patients, which ultimately increases if they're next available, patients who schedule out for a month out for a UTI and are no longer necessarily need to be seen in a month out. They need to get seen today. And they went to go shop around. So, looking at your schedule, I think it's one of the biggest things. It's not the only thing. That's definitely one of the biggest things, though, and for you to see your patients in a timely manner. And again, the schedule, we mentioned this, it's just an image or a guide for your day. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to turn out that way, right? So but making sure we have enough availability, because at the end of the day, if you look at your schedule, probably have some missed opportunities. And how are you being proactive in order to actually see those patients that are in your schedule? Or if not, how can we open up that availability and offer it to those individuals that actually need to get seen today?
Yeah, Sharing, I know you've seen this from the admin side of things. And do you want to elaborate at all about kind of what you see from what Gabe's talking about with access?
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with Gabe. Access is really the first step to quality care, right? If they can't get through our doors when they need to see us, we can't deliver quality care. So I think it's really the first gap to fill and the foundation for alternative payment models and our ability to be successful in this world.
And from a data perspective, how would I know as an organization that I am where I need to be in terms of access? My guess is that Gabe or Mel would want to weigh in on this.
I just want to share that, we worked with a payer a number of years ago that had a pretty forward-thinking chief medical officer, CMO, and they had brought us in to basically, they said, we want to hire you and offer you to the clinics within our network that are willing to take you up on your services, because we have got to save money on non-emergency emergency room visits. And that was the biggest thing that they noticed. I mean, they wanted a bunch of other things. They wanted, care coordination and planning, et cetera. But the biggest thing, I sat at one of their monthly executive meetings after we had worked with like 6 or 7 of their clinic sites, and they pulled up the data and they had saved like over $1 million in some of these clinics over the course of less than a year in emergency room claims that went down from those health centers that had worked with us directly. So clearly just keeping people out of the emergency room isn't a better care. It isn't an alternative payment models. But that right there puts a bunch of money on the table because of the crazy expense of the ED that then all of a sudden starts to free up all kinds of other stuff, because people are running around chasing a grant for $40,000 or $60,000. And you're like, well, how about if you save $1 million in the 6 months? And that changes the numbers.
Yeah. Gabe, what do you like to see from an access perspective in clinics that you work with?
What I like to see, or what I would like to see, is providing quality care in a timely manner, right? Going back to access. Looking at your schedule, looking at, and even historical data, like how many missed opportunities have you had? What's your no-show? And then guiding yourself, what makes the most sense? We went to go see an organization. And I noticed that they had so many blocks that were scheduled for either 72 hours out or same days. And then ultimately it became a barrier because the patient didn't call at a certain time and they didn't fit the patient description for that schedule. So then ultimately those slots just went unused, and neither the organization gained anything out of it, neither did the patient, right? And most importantly, they didn't get the care they received. So just making it simple enough for patients to schedule. I mean, looking at patient portals as well, they're not being utilized to its fullest potential because it becomes this, you need to take a course to how to use a portal to schedule so you can actually fit into someone's patient schedule. It becomes a real barrier to care when you make it super difficult to schedule, or you have to be a certain type of patient to fit into a certain type of appointment slot.
Yeah. If I'm a clinic who is thinking like, okay, I'm starting to put into place some of this care management stuff to think about integration, but I hear you on the access piece. What are some areas that that folks can start working on to improve their access?
Adrian, I can weigh on this. I think the first thing that can be done and should be done is reaching out to the patients. And I think we are doing a big push with other clients that we're working on is doing not only confirmation calls, but confirmation texts. And I say text specifically because that's a big push that we're trying to get our clients to do so they can reach out to their clients. So those clients that potentially might miss their appointment can get to an appointment that it works better for them, or they could just cancel and have that appointment open up for other patients that do need it and that need it on a timely manner, back to that access part that Gabe was mentioning.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Brizia, you know, I'm sure that there's plenty of health center CEOs or COOs that are out there saying, you know, yeah, we do text reminders. And so these automated texts, they go out from, let's say, ECW, and it says, you have an appointment tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We'll see you then. Or here's your, my favorite is the reply why or reply in. So what can you get a little bit more specific about what you mean by texting and why it works better? Because I think a lot of people have tried it and it didn't seem like it worked better.
Yes, I think we've been trying to coach people to make those texts more personal. Say, hey, it's Brizia from Happy Little Clinic. I see that you have an appointment at 1:30. Does this appointment still work for you? And it's asking that question and signing a Brizia or with like a waving face, an emoji, something so that it knows it's coming from a real person and it's not a robo text, because we all get robo texts and most of us ignore those robo-texts because we know they're robo-texts. So just making it more personalized and making it say it's coming from a person, we also like tell them like, I'll see you tomorrow. I'll be wearing the blue scrubs, or I'll be the one wearing the glasses when you come in to, so I could check you in. So like making it very personalized so that the patients don't, it's a person on the other side of the text, so that you can get that response and get that connection with the patients.
Yes, and if I could weigh in, yes, and what I would add on to that, it's just not once and done. I see a lot of organizations or, you know, staff just either call a patient or text the patient and they're like, why I texted them and I didn't receive anything. It's, we have to be proactive, right? Not be passive as far as like, oh, okay, well, you know, now we have another missed opportunity. And really it's, you have to be consistent in your messaging to condition your patients that there's going to be a new way moving forward. I remember calling patients and they wouldn't even let me say like my name. They'd be like, yes, Gabe, we're walking in. Right. So, but it didn't happen overnight. I had to be diligent and send the same reminders and be consistent with the process in order for that to happen. If not, you know, you're not going to get where you want to be.
Yeah. So I've heard some of the concrete tactics are definitely like doing robust confirmations, making those calls and texts. And Gabe talked about simplifying the schedule. Sheree, I think I saw you unmute yourself. What did you want to add?
Yeah, just to Gabe's point there, the patient relationship that you can develop with some of these tactics is so critical. And I think that is going to be so important in the APM model and the future. We were just on a call, Gabe and I actually yesterday, we were just on a call with a client yesterday, and they just started doing robust confirmations. And they were already hearing feedback from their patients about how much they loved those calls and how special they felt. And so that relationship building and getting your patients to understand that you value their time and their appointment with you is really important, I think is a key driver here too.
Yeah, you all know that I am obsessed with two-way texting as like a method of building relationships with patients. I think that the other part about it, in addition to it's more inclusive because even if folks run out of minutes, they often have unlimited texting, but it also in a time whenever it's very challenging to hire staff can decrease the staff time it takes to still build those patient relationships because it gets rid of phone tag, which is like my least favorite thing. Okay, so we talked about getting ready for access. What are other ways that health centers can assess if they're ready for alternative payment models?
So, Adrian, if I can just weigh in, what are the things that, I mean, what we spend so much time on Coleman Associates thinking about is the workflows and the access and the communication within the walls of the health center. And it could be theoretical walls because we're talking also virtual visits. So it could be, you know, not real brick and mortar walls. But a whole other piece, and, you know, obviously an organization has to have relationships with their hospital. They have to have relationships with the specialist. They have to have this, you know, be able to help information exchange. They have to be able to trade information, update records, et cetera, because those expensive patients, I mean, yes, every patient's an expensive patient if you never get them in for their PAP or their stuff like that, because then you just never know what's going to end up, you know, cooking inside of this crazy human body that we have. However, it's those expensive patients that kind of can make or break this APM world. And so you have to have those relationships with other people. But as Coleman Associates, we have found that's not the hard part. I mean, it is, yes, you have to outreach those people. You have to develop a relationship with them. But honestly, that can be done within a department. A department can do that, can establish those relationships, connections, pass through the information, and you're good. What can't be done in a department, and the reason why we spend so much time at Coleman, sometimes we get kind of pigeonholed into just focusing on what's happening inside the visit, even though that's not where we want to focus all of our energy. But it just turns out that if you can't like flip the switch for those people and get that cultural change and that communication, then you're dead in the water, which is why we force people to push on that. Because once you start the wheels turning and you get the culture change, then you can do all those other things that will also make the APM model work better. So I just, you know, I don't want us to just focus on these things, even though I think they're all brilliant things. It's what they represent, which is changing the current of how we work, that really makes an organization successful. I think, Sheree, you might want to weigh in on that too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really about system redesign and understanding how all of these pieces fit together to deliver a better patient experience. And no question, we see that with our clients and their ability to make a system-wide change that really, truly does impact patients and frankly, impact staff just as much.
Melissa, do you want to talk a little bit about what I know you and I have been working really hard on in terms of how do we get people to this next place after they get some of the basic stuff taken care of? Like, where do we go after that?
Yes. So I would say, and frankly, you and I and Amanda on our team have kind of taken ownership of it. But frankly, it was the brainchild of every member of our team at our last face-to-face in Boulder, Colorado. We were in this old 1900 rental house with this like rickety back staircase where, remember this, like somebody had like stashed like a dead Christmas tree and you kind of wondered like if the place was a little haunted, whatever.
No comment there, but yeah, it was really weird at a certain point.
Yeah, I would have gone in if it wasn't for that. You know? No, just kidding. So anyway, we were at this place and we were talking about all these different components and we all have realized it's like, when you teach a class enough, you start to learn what are the prerequisites and what has to come before what has to come before what has to come before what in order to get the education to happen. When you don't know and you're not really an experienced teacher, like sometimes we see this in organizations and no diss to these people, but sometimes organizations have like, you know, a slew of like MPHers who don't actually have practical experience doing things. And so then you can sit down and it becomes like, you know, this mental exercise that gets you kind of to this place where you don't really get to something conclusive. And our team in that house with the haunted back staircase basically said, let's write down everything that needs to happen, and then let's go back and work our way back to every prerequisite thinking about. And we debated at that kitchen table and in that living room at that breakfast bar, we debated, could someone get to point Z if they hadn't done X, or if they hadn't done T, or if they hadn't done U? And we were sharing examples. Well, yes, but remember so-and-so clinic, they did this and this, and they were able to get away with not doing that other thing. So we had this very active, like, seemingly like day or day and a half long debate about what the prerequisites were. And then we started writing them down on different flip chart paper and coming up with an order for them. So that we've translated into what would really be kind of an X-axis of change. And what the other piece that we've realized is that you can move an organization through these pieces, but if leadership doesn't hold people accountable, if leadership doesn't know how to lead, if leadership can't support the infrastructure, apply the resources, and understand and communicate the value, then all that is for naught. And so it turns out that there's kind of two ceilings. So the leadership capability turned out to be the Y-axis. And the ceiling is, if your leadership isn't more capable, you can only go so far. And in the same way, if your processes aren't too evolved, even great leaders can only go so far. So you have to move both of these things at the same time in order to get where we're going. And so that's what we're working on really now, is codifying and quantifying, like giving a graded number system to each step in the process that's a prerequisite and a destination. Sorry, I get so excited about this stuff. I kind of can't help myself.
No, that's okay. That I think it's important, and I'm curious, from the folks that were there, did you have a favorite tactic that we came up with that is like a place that we want people, that we see people need to get to in kind of the higher stages of preparedness for alternative payment models? And I'll go first, since I asked a question that I didn't prepare you for. I think for me is very much looking forward as we think. So my background is in care coordination and population health stuff. And so I've, like Melissa mentioned, people going to the emergency department. I was fortunate enough in Chicago to be testing out a system where I could see my patients going to the emergency department and hospital in real time. And I was doing DPI at the same time, and I could watch them no-show and then pop up in the emergency department. And it happened every single time. And so I'm really excited to, one, see social supports and behavioral health and substance abuse be much more integrated into care teams so that it's not just a medical focus. It's really a whole health focus. And I'm also really excited about, you know, once we really started, you know, it's probably been, it was at the beginning of the pandemic, whenever it was like a switch flipped and people's brains were like, people responded to text messages better than they did to calls. Like no matter what their age was, no matter what their socioeconomic status was, we just started to see it in the data is that texting was the thing. And that opens up so many opportunities for things like, you know, with the way that climate change can impact the health of your community, of like texting people and saying, hey, there's a heat wave, here's where your cooling centers are. Or if you're, you know, we're going through a major flu outbreak, if you're diabetic, here's what you do if you're sick, right? And like, this opens up opportunities that don't look anything like what we often see between the four walls of an exam room. It's like, how do you really take care of people? And that's the part that I get really excited about. Does anyone else have a favorite? I'm the kind of person that would have a favorite for that, though.
If I remember correctly, Adrian, I think you had a variety of favorites there. And I think what I remember the rest of the team talking about was really trying to figure out, almost like, it's kind of like status on an airplane or at a hotel or something like that. It's like, you have to somehow like get to one level, and then like you set the target for like the next level. And then you get to that level and you set the target for the next level. And I think what we've seen is we've seen some health centers that want to zip ahead with one thing because they have one passionate person who's like pulling the oars, kind of like you and your care coordination. They have one person who's driving that part forward. So you get that part to tick up, but then the rest of it doesn't follow. So we spent, I remember having furious debates about whether or not we wanted to go with the, you know, the bronze, silver, gold, platinum, or how we wanted to go about it, you know, like stick, shell, rock, quad, you know, to whatever the order would be of like progression to get people to a place where they could feel like they were accomplishing something and know where to go next.
Yeah. Okay. What advice do you all have for community health centers that are preparing for APMs?
Melissa mentioned about being prepared. It definitely takes a leadership team, right? And it also takes the folks that are actually doing the work in the front lines. They need to be having the same vision. And I think that's one of the biggest struggles. Leadership sees it one way. The staff sees it a different way. And ultimately, sometimes clash in order for really to see this thing, like, you know, get to the next level. That's one, you know, making sure that everyone sees the same vision, communicating, and that can express to over communicate as far as where the organization is going. Do not buffer anyone's reality. And patient access, I think. Yeah, I was a patient before I was an employee, so I definitely felt it in the front lines and, you know, seeing it firsthand. It's terrible when, you know, patients take a day off work and then for whatever reason, then now we can't see them because we're running behind, or they came in a little late, but we're like, we're going to take that wiggle room. So we're going to say, you know what, you're a no-show now, but we're not being proactive. So I would say definitely make it easy to see your patients. Like, they do not want to go there just to hang around with you. They want to get seen, get taken care of, and then also go home. So patient access and having a clear vision.
Yeah, just to build off of that, I was at a learning session yesterday, and that was what the communication was part. Like, the biggest thing that the frontline staff said that they enjoyed when there was over communication, and they felt it when there wasn't enough communication. So I think that leadership coming to the frontline staff and getting their input and telling them what's going on, where we're going, putting that like vision up for everybody so that everybody could be rowing on the same place. Because I think as staff, you get overwhelmed and you just start looking down and start trying to just get done whatever is in front of you. And you lose the bigger picture, the goal, the what to go towards. So just communicating and making sure that that is done very well and very clearly.
Adrian, one of the things that I know organizations have to do and have to get themselves to a place to do is to get really strong communication between the CFO, the CEO, and the CMO, or DLN, the director of nursing as well. Because I think what I see a lot of times is CFOs are the cautious ones, which is totally appropriate, but they're making sure, and you will have to make investments. You'll have to make HIT, you know, information and technology investments, both in communication to patients, communications with other facilities, but you can't make investments and then not roll those out well and have people not applying the technology. So it has to be this back and forth. So you have to be cautious and you can't overspend, especially when you're still getting some fee for service and some alternative payments. So you have to balance that, but you really have to be strategic. You have to make calculated risks, and no one person holds all of the knowledge to make the calculated risk. So you need to have a couple people that really get into what are our payers want? What are they going to recognize us for? Not just this year, but in 2 years. And how do we get to that place? And then figure out from a clinical perspective, how do we get ourselves aligned behind that? And that it just is a real balancing act, and everybody's going to have to be a little less cautious than they want to be. And I did notice that in last year's report, in fact, Ryan and her team was just pointing out to me that there's a significant number of states that are already getting like 10%, 50%, 20% of managed care. So that's reliable money. And when you start to get reliable money, then you can take other risks that you couldn't take before when you were, you know, waiting 60, 90 days for payments to come in a fee-for-service world. So being really strategic about how you use that reliable money, I think, is going to be clutch.
I love that, Melissa. I think the other thing that I would add is this is just reflecting back a little bit on COVID and what health centers went through to move so quickly to respond to that pandemic. In a lot of situations that forced us to move rapidly and kind of taught us in some ways what we could do and challenging ourselves to think outside the box. I mean, how many of us implemented telehealth for a significant portion of our patient population? So as hard as COVID was, it also taught us a lot about who we are and what we can do and how we can leverage technology and meet patient needs in a completely different way. You know, we see centers implementing the telehealth and using that to create flexibility in their schedules. And that is a really meaningful solution to reduce barriers for patients when they have transportation access issues or other things like that. And there are lots of ways to use technology too to monitor our patients in different ways. And so I would say the technology side of it, all the way from simple things like the two-way texting and you know, beyond telehealth, maybe even things like remote patient monitoring strategies like that.
Yeah. My team took a lot of the good ones, but I think things that I would say is, and nobody's going to be surprised that I'm the one saying this, is looking at your data and making sure that you're getting reliable data so that you know what your situation is. And that's true of operational data, like we often talk about with cycle time, missed opportunities, no-show rate, patients per hour, certainly. But really looking at your quality data and your social risk factor data. And then the other thing is start tearing down silos, I think is going to be really important. And Melissa mentioned at the top levels of the organization, which is really critical because otherwise you can't do it in the rest of the organization. But like, we're seeing the same patients between behavioral health, between care coordination, between dental, between medical, between, you know, at every level of the organization. And if we're not talking to each other, then we're going to really struggle to make care awesome for patients. And I think, you know, with that, like Breezy, I thought your point was great. It was like, communication is the key. Is like, it's both very simple and very challenging, but within most organizations, I think they have the expertise to get to where we need to go, but only if they tap into everybody who has that expertise. Any final thoughts, folks, before I wrap this shindig up?
I think I would just close by saying that I'm incredibly excited about this opportunity, right? Health centers in many ways have been stuck in this space of caring for patients when they come in for a visit with encounter rates and version of fee-for-service. And so for us to be able to stretch ourselves and care for patients in a different way and meet different needs than just, you know, not that it's not important, but just those labs, just that diabetic A1C, those are critically important, but there's so much more opportunity beyond that to really care for patients. So I think it's an incredible opportunity for us to leverage and be excited about the future of healthcare and health centers.
Yes. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to finally feel like we're getting compensated for all that other work that needs to get done. that we're always like, oh my God, like I can't bill for this. Or, you know, sometimes we're like, I should have this patient come in for this thing, even though they don't really need to see them. But it's just, there's no other way to get paid for it. And this is a potentially huge opportunity for us to do the work we're doing and get paid for it, as long as we can see it that way. And it's so much of this is framing and thinking about what the opportunity is. I a zillion percent agree with Sheree that there's so much opportunity if we can just get ourselves to that place where we can capitalize on it and, you know, do a little dance and move ourselves into position.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, I just want to give a big shout out to my team. Thanks to Melissa, Sheree, Breezy, and Gabe for joining us on this live stream and trying this out with me. And I hope everyone has a great rest of their afternoon. Bye, everyone. I love talking to the Chispas about anything, but especially as we think about where we're going in the future with alternative payment models, especially in the community health space. So I just want to give a big shout out to Sheree, to Melissa, to Gabriel, to Breezia for taking the time out of their day and sharing their wisdom and their insight about how to get ready for alternative payment models. So make sure that you like and subscribe to the Coleman Associates Innovation Podcast so that you never miss an episode. If you or someone you know should be interviewed for an episode, go ahead and shoot us an email at notify@colemanassociates.com or reach out to us on social media. To keep up with all the Chispa happenings, follow us on LinkedIn. A big shout out to Nikolai, who has started editing our podcast for us, and we'll see you next time.